Happy 4th of July, Portland, Maine. It's a special day, Day of Independence.
Happy birthday to you, Steve.
right back at you. Happy birthday to our wonderful country. This is July 4th, 1776.
Yeah.
You weren't around back then, were you?
No, not quite that far.
You're a bit older than me, but not... I'm kidding. Of course you weren't. But you know what's funny about that is that compared to other countries, and as you travel around the world, you kind of see it both in architecture and in history and recorded history. America's not that old.
No, we're just a baby.
Yeah, we're relatively young, 1776.
Yep.
Any special 4th of July plans? Where do you watch fireworks? Where
I usually go to the prom, but I think this year we're going up to Freeport.
Oh, I've done both.
Yeah,
going down to the prom, I think they have Melissa Manchester.
Yes, she's going to be there,
yeah. She's singing. That's an event that's partly sponsored by the Maine Red Claws and the Symphony Orchestra. It's fantastic. Let's see, what do we got on this day, July 4th? I think I knew this fact, but until you printed it out as on this day, I wasn't, I hadn't remembered it, but both John Adams and Thomas Jefferson both died on July 4th, not only on just July 4th, but in 1826.
The same day.
The 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
And reportedly, and unless I source this through four sources, I'm going to have to just say reportedly, but reportedly.
Is that your standard, four sources?
Well, it depends. Okay. Three if I know them, two if they're related. But according to the notes, John Quincy Adams? His last words were, he's about to die. Mm. So John Adams is about to die, and his last words were, quote, Thomas Jefferson still survives. And that was like his last breath, right?
Yes.
He was unaware that apparently just a few hours earlier, Thomas Jefferson, he died.
Right. Yeah, so he outlived Jefferson.
And there's no report on what his last words were.
No, that's interesting, right?
He may have had some sort of confession. He may have had, hey, I did this thing wrong 8 years ago and it didn't have much historic relevance.
Never know.
What else? The Clash play their first live gig in 1976. Are you a big Clash fan?
I am.
Wow.
Who wouldn't be? It's just great.
Do you know where I was July 4th, 1976?
No.
How would you know? I was at an Elton John concert in Foxborough, Mass., and he was playing this bicentennial concert, and it was great. I had to be like 17. All I know is he flew in this helicopter, and it was like, there's Elton John.
Do you remember the bicentennial train that went around that year?
Bicentennial was such a huge thing.
It was huge.
It was, it was a big celebration all around the country. Yeah. Super cool. Let's see. We got birthdays. We got, Dear Abby, who passed away a few years ago.
Right.
But her daughter has taken over as Dear Abby.
Yes.
So she passed away in 2013. George Steinbrenner, he's been passed away a while. Today would have been his. And Malia Obama, one of President Barack
Isn't that
Obama's.
His oldest?
I believe so. She turned 17.
Yeah.
What else do we have? Geez, in a few minutes, we have our first guest, Greg Dufour, President and CEO of Camden National Bank. They recently announced that they're acquiring Bank of Maine. That's supposed to be happening sometime in October. We recorded that interview a couple of days ago. Really interesting guy. Really smart guy. Somebody who's really connected to the community. We'll have that interview in just about 2 minutes. Where do you stand, Deb? I think I already know, but just so we can record it for history, years from now I can play it for you and give you grief about it.
Yeah, sure.
The whole Paul LePage impeachment, Mark Eves, the letter, and that whole thing.
From what I know, I don't know everything, but from what I've heard and seen and read so far, I don't think he should have done it, but I don't think he did anything legally wrong.
Okay.
Inappropriate. I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that he was chosen because he was right in the studio with Ray and I saying that he did not support charter schools, that he considered them a threat to the public school systems. So I could not believe it when I heard that they hired him.
Well, I think that's a valid issue. I think there's an issue of hypocrisy to say to somebody, hey, if politically and personally you've been against this, but I think that's a completely separate and unrelated issue to Paul LePage saying, here is a member of the state legislature. He interviewed for a job. He was hired for a job. And then Paul LePage is going to jump in and say, I personally don't think he's right for the job. So I'm going to use my position as the chief elected officer in the state to get him fired or to get the offer retracted. But that's the part that I think really is chilling, that if Paul LePage feels as though he is the king of Maine, it's not his state. He's elected by the people to serve the people.
Yeah, but he runs the state, and that's a state school.
They weren't his funds. They were discretionary in the sense that they weren't allocated in the budget. They're not discretionary where he can put in, like, you know, cotton candy machines in every town, or he could do anything else. He still has to follow the good sense and the ethics of the Maine people. It's discretionary in that it was not allocated by the legislature, and so he had the option to allocate certain money.
Right. And he exercised his option.
Yeah. And I think it was a huge mistake. Yeah. And I also think the impeachment thing is going to pick up a little steam. I don't have a horse in that race other than being disappointed in our governor. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, as we all are.
With that said, why don't we get into our interview on this warm 4th of July weekend. Happy 4th of July again to everyone listening. Thank you for listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. Let's go into our interview done a couple of days ago with Greg Dufour. He is president and CEO of Camden National, and I think you'll enjoy the interview. Welcome back. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. Money. Please join me in welcoming one of the top money men here in Maine, Greg Dufour, President and CEO of Camden National Bank. Thanks for being here today, Greg.
It's my pleasure.
You guys have a lot of news in terms of acquisition, the Bank of Maine, and what's going on here in Maine relative to banking. But before we get to that, I always like to start with a little bit of background on the guest in terms of how you ended up here in Maine, your association with Camden National Bank, kind of like the early years of Greg, and even some career interest in what early either academic or personal experiences you had that kind of led you into banking, and then we'll go into what's going on at Camden National Bank.
Oh, great. Well, I'd be glad to. And
so where'd you grow up?
Well, actually, I grew up in Old Town.
Really?
And so I ended up in Maine by birth.
Well, fantastic. You're one of the few people that are not from away, right?
I think sometimes it feels like that.
It feels like. So what was your path in terms of going to school, in terms of studying either finance or accounting, or how did you end up going into banking?
Well, it was kind of interesting. Growing up in Old Town, and it's just 4 miles away from the University of Maine at Orono, and my father worked there. And it was really interesting because I basically grew up on the campus because my father would work there. I tell people I'm probably one of the longest alumni from there because I even went to nursery school in one of their programs on campus.
Wow.
So it was just kind of natural for me to go to the University of Maine. I had an interest in business and in finance, you know, really from my father's influence from his career. And really not thinking about life too much beyond Old Town Orono, but luckily my father gave me some great guidance and pointed out there's more to life than the 4 mile radius that I was raised in. So my wife and I, and my wife's from Bangor, we got married right out of college and moved to Texas, and I got my MBA from the University of North Texas outside of Dallas. Really just from we wanted a different experience, but still wanted to stay in the United States. And so we lived down there for 5 years. I got my MBA, started my career at Texas Instruments in their finance area. And we enjoyed it, but we wanted to come back east closer to family. And moved back to Maine, networking. And as I tell people how I got into banking, it's like a lot of other people. Well, they were hiring.
Wow.
And started with Merrill Trust Company up in Bangor. And that at that point, that organization was owned by Fleet Financial Group way back then. And they actually merged as soon as I joined them with Northstar Bank. Here
sooner or later, everyone merges, right? Isn't that the way of the world?
It should have been a sign that would be my career. And I was probably one of those people that had to be away from Maine to really appreciate it. And so we were in Maine for just a few years, and then we moved away again. And I stayed with Fleet through all of its acquisitions, moving all over New England. Then in early 2001, I had an epiphany that I wanted to have a quality of life, and I was commuting over an hour from Franklin, Massachusetts into Boston, and came home and said, okay, I want to simplify my life, and my wife said, that's great, I'll only move back to Maine.
Wow.
And luckily, Camden National Bank was looking for a chief financial officer, and we got to move back home.
Well, I'm keeping a little checklist here, Greg. By the way, we have Greg Dufour, who's the president and CEO of Camden National Bank. They're involved with the acquisition of Bank of Maine. We'll get to that in a sec. But, you and I both fell in love with a girl from Bangor, check. You and I both lived in Texas. I lived in Beaumont, Texas for a while, check. I grew up in Boston, so I spent a lot of time in Boston. In fact, I went to a soccer camp in Franklin. Get that, check. Wow, we've had parallel universes. The only Absolutely. Difference is I'm no good at math.
And I'm not good on the radio.
So. And you're not good in the radio. Well, then we have that in common, too. So check. Quad. So with Camden, you joined them as CFO, so you were on the financial side. Yes. And my guess is your career, the head guy left, or you pushed him out, or you ascended to the throne of the head of Camden. And talk a little bit about pre-acquisition, kind of the history of Camden National Bank. And I think people listening have general and mostly personal experiences with banking relative to their own personal needs. And much of it, I think, is driven by proximity, where you grow up, the first bank you have,
right. That
type of thing. But talk about Camden a little bit.
Sure. And I think that's really important because that does influence how I and my executive team try to manage the organization is that we have a long, deep history. Camden is a beautiful coastal town here in Maine. Our bank was founded by six people in 1875, and the legend is in the back room of the local Five and Dime on the same street corner, actually, that we still have our main office today, where my office is. And as I tell people, those six people couldn't have found a better street corner in Maine to create a bank, and it's up to us not to mess it up. It has been very community-focused since its founding, and we have a deep legacy to make sure that we're taking care of our communities. Now, through probably the first 90 years of its existence, it was really just focused on mid-coast communities. Then my predecessors, and with banking, we have a need that we have to grow in order to maintain our relevance and maintain our service levels to customers. And so we've been growing, but in a very methodical way to really not only grow the organization, but we feel serving our communities, serving our customers, being good corporate citizens, all part of the essence of being a community bank, especially in Maine.
Interesting. So For Camden National Bank, let's talk about the merger with the Bank of Maine, and from the announcement, where are things relative to the merger and the integration of Camden National Bank and the Bank of Maine, and talk about what that means for the organization?
Sure. The big reason to do any type of merger, you have to answer the question why, and Camden National has been very successful. Our franchise today, before the merger, goes as far north as Old Town. It cuts across to Greenville. When you look at the map down east, we go to Jonesport. And then, you know, we have a core franchise, obviously, in Midcoast Maine with offices in Boston, in Bangor, Augusta, Lewis, and Auburn. But it and we've done well. But what it reflects is the Maine economy. As we know, most of the growth in Maine, most of the economic activities in southern Maine, we have a few locations here. But last year we looked and said, in order for us to grow, to remain relevant, to really keep maintaining what Camden National does, we had to grow in southern Maine. We were actually expecting to do that by opening up branches, hiring people, expanding it on what we call a de novo or an organic growth phase. Mm-hmm. But then in January, the opportunity came up to bid on the Bank of Maine as they were considering their own strategic alternatives. And it really fit into our overall five-year strategic plan and in many, many ways allowed us to accelerate that plan because now we're acquiring an existing organization that's dynamic, that's located in exactly the same areas where we wanted to be located. So it really meshed the two organizations strategically, which is the first major step you have. And then in banks, as with any other organizations that merge, you have a lot of internal things to go through, systems. But with banks, we have a lot of regulatory requirements to do, as well as because we're a publicly traded company, we have a lot of legal requirements from a securities and exchange perspective as well. And that's the process that we're going through right now.
And what is the timeline that you anticipate at this point for it to be fully closed and fully integrated?
We expect to have it closed and integrated in mid-October, which is an extremely aggressive schedule, but we really wanted to focus our organization in transitioning the customers very quickly and start operating as one organization as fast as we could. And so right now we're looking at the date from a systems perspective is October 16th. We're focused on that, and it seems all systems are go.
Great. You're listening to Tad Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. We've got Craig DeFore here. He's president and CEO of Camden National Bank. Since you are the acquiring party and you are the larger bank being Camden, it looks like in press reports that organizationally the plan is to change all the branches to be consistent with branding under the Camden National Bank banner. And you being the chief executive, is that still, you know, the organizational plan, or have you told the guys at Bank of Maine and really they're thinking, we thought we were going to be running it? So talk a little bit about that to go forward in terms of both the branding of the new organization after October and then also the leadership.
Sure. And you're right, you know, our branding will be under the Camden National Bank name. That's really for, you know, a whole variety of reasons, partly because we are the larger organization and we have to protect, call it our brand, but our business that we have. But with that said, the Bank of Maine has a great name, a great reputation, great employees that are there. I'm very impressed by all the folks that I've met in that franchise. So when we look at the organization, and John Everetts, who's the chairman and CEO, is 68 years old, you know, and he, you know, stated previously that he wanted to, you know, step away. I won't say John will retire because he's a pretty active person, but he agreed that, you know, he would, you know, we have him as a consultant for a year after the transactions closed, and that was all set up. From a leadership perspective, the really big thing to make the combined organization successful, and it's a very difficult thing, you have to go through and really say, who's the best people here in the organization? And a little bit, you don't do it by, you know, you came from Camden, you came from Bank of Maine. You have to say really from a quality perspective. So in the executive team that we're creating, two major executives we announced will be part of the combined organization's executive team. Mac Hayden, who is the chief credit risk officer at Bank of Maine, he'll have that position here with the combined organization. And Renee Smith, who heads up their marketing effort, will lead the combined organization's marketing effort as well. And that really highlights some of the things, and it's always tough when you hear, and it happens a lot in Maine, banks are buying banks, and it can be other companies buying other companies. But within that, we offer a lot of opportunities for people. And we get very cautious. We're monitoring any job displacement that we may have. But even within that, there's just a lot of development opportunities. We've gone through a lot as Camden National. We've acquired things over the years. We've grown our organization on our own over the years. And one of the things that I like the best is somebody that, when I joined the organization 14 years ago, they were a junior person just starting out, and now they're running big parts of our company. And it's, I think in Maine, a lot of times we don't really talk and celebrate some of the great careers people are building here.
Right.
And some of it is through having challenging and complex things to do, like an acquisition and a merger.
Was there any thought to staying with the Bank of Maine? I mean, you mentioned there were a lot of details, and there's a lot of organizational details, and there's legal structure and stuff, but it could have been called Bank of Maine as easily as Camden National Bank. Knowing that Camden National Bank has the longer legacy and probably closer emotional ties to your customers because of the length of time, Bank of Maine was a relatively new organization. But doesn't Bank of Maine suggest a broader visibility or a broader platform, not just for people doing personal banking here in Maine, but knowing how important commercial banking is for growth and knowing how important banking that goes beyond our borders? Was there any consideration of Bank of Maine suggest a larger platform versus Camden, which is a lovely place, one of my favorite places to visit, but by its own definition, it's local?
Right. And actually, yes, we go through every decision that we make, whether it's name or systems or people. You always have to look at both sides of the question to make sure that you're getting the best solution. It's interesting that several years ago, having your town's name in your title would suggest being a local. However, when you look at especially the landscape of banking today, most of the banks have still maintained their localness by having that name, even though they're operating across the state like we do today. So probably not as much as what it used to be, several years ago. And you can just see that in the Portland market by the banks that are competing there. There's, their town names are still there. But the real proof is how we operate. Whatever the name can be, and it can be a very broad name, it could be not geographic specific, it's how do you execute and serve your customers on a daily basis, and that's the people that are on the ground doing it. They're the real carriers and guardians, if you will, of the brand. And it's really what we do, not what we call ourselves.
Perfect. We've got Greg DeFore here. He is president and CEO of Camden National Bank, soon to be president CEO of the new Camden National Bank, which will include Bank of Maine. Let's switch gears a little bit. And I do want to get back to local banking, but let's talk about Greece. Obviously, if you're in the banking business and you're involved with finance, you're attuned to everything going on in the marketplace. You're in tune to what's going on in terms of Federal Reserve, American money, interest rates. Over the last few weeks, Greece has been in the news. And the short synopsis is five or six, Greece has been part of the Euro Union since it was created. But over the last 5 years, Greece has had some real systemic financial problems as a country, and within the country, companies and a lot of default and a lot of problem with money. And 5 years ago, they started kind of a five-year plan to try to work with the World Bank and to work with the Euro overall organization. They've gotten billions of dollars. And then at each stage, they went back and said, we need more money. And the World Bank and the Euro Union leaders said, okay, well, you have to have more reforms. Reforms being changing interest rates, changing pension, changing all these different levers that countries and then municipalities can pull that change the economy, how much they tax people, how much money they borrow, how they look at their own federal pension and their debt obligations. And it's gotten to the point where at every point they kept going back saying, we need more money. We'll try a little harder. And then over the last couple of weeks, there was supposed to be a multi-billion dollar in euro payment a few days ago. And then there's another one due in the next couple of weeks. And here with our stock market in our kind of financial systems, it's had a dramatic effect. But it's such a small amount. I think it's only 2% of the euro, Greece. A, have you been following it? And, you know, and I'm not even involved in banking, and I've got CNBC on in my office every day, and every day I end up shaking my head going, oh, Greece, what are you doing?
Right.
And what's your thoughts in terms of, because you're running a Maine-based bank, but you have to be tuned in to what's going on in the world because we're part of a global market, and money and finance is really the everything's so interconnected now that you can't just say, I run Camden National Bank. I don't know what's going on. You're part of the state. You're part of the U.S. federal system. You're part of global markets. Do you have an idea what's going on in Greece? You're the professional.
Well, maybe to answer it first, yes. Even though I'm running a Maine-based bank, most of our business are Maine markets. And it is amazing that you do have to worry about global issues, whether it's Greece, whether it's China. Because as you said, everything is interconnected now. And you know, maybe 20 or 30 years ago, my predecessor at Camden National Bank didn't have to worry about that stuff. Right. But we absolutely have to now. And a lot of it that we look at is how does it impact interest rates? How does it impact the stock market? How does it impact even our customers? And even on an individual basis, when you think about that, we're all interconnected. That if the situation in Greece results in higher interest rates, that's going to trickle through the global markets. It's going to trickle through what we could offer on interest rates for somebody trying to buy their first home. Really a unique situation, and that just global companies. We all are global companies now in one fashion or another. How I look at Greece is in a couple of ways. One is, as you explained it, it's always been, well, give us some more, we'll try, give us more, we'll try. Whether it's a country or a county or a state or an individual, it all comes down into fiscal responsibility. And just like running our own budgets at home, sometimes you have to make the tough decisions.
But it's math. I've been saying that for years, right, Deb?
Yes,
I mean,
indeed.
When we talk about politics, we talk about our state budget, we talk about municipality, you can talk about the abstract. You can talk about, well, this feels right, or Greece can say, oh, you're being predatory and you want your money. But all that hyperbole goes into like a Word document. But at the end of the day, the Excel spreadsheet has to add up one way
Correct.
Or the other.
Absolutely.
How much you're spending and how much you're taking in. If the numbers don't, then you have to be sensitive to both kind of the human enterprise, in effect. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we've lost our capacity, both locally, statewide, federally, and globally, to accept math as this immovable object where, and if you're in Greece, you could just look at the math and go, well, here's our economy. We're taking in this amount of money. We're spending this. Boy, the math isn't working. Let's write and talk about it a little bit. The math has to work.
Right. And absolutely, but it's the realization that you have to make the decision not to, whether it's a country saying, you know, even in the U.S., running deficits, you know, we're not willing to adjust our service levels to fit the tax revenues that we get. If you're at home and you have a choice, do you want to go out to dinner Saturday night? If you don't have the money for it, use the credit card. But until an individual or country says no more, the math doesn't work, I don't have the money to pay for it, we'll get into these situations.
Yeah. What about, let's talk about Maine a little bit, because, you know, you just talked about, you know, the whether it's a company or municipality. One of the, and I know as a CEO of a publicly traded company and a company based in Maine, you cannot and should not be very out front in being critical of the state legislature or the government, because that wouldn't be good. That wouldn't serve your customers. But just between you and I, Greg, talking about the Maine budget, okay, and you know our three or four listeners, just between you and I, I've been saying for years the biggest challenge here in Maine is we have a huge infrastructure 35,000 plus square miles, right? 488 municipalities, only 1.3 million people. So we have huge infrastructure, and we have a relatively weak economic engine for kind of natural reasons in terms of how the state's evolved. And with all that said, we have to be particularly sensitive to budget issues. The state, on the state level, there was just a vote this week to override Paula Page's veto to pass a $6 billion plus two-year state budget. But the state doesn't, in their budgeting, on local municipalities, they do. In the case of Yarmouth, where I was chairman of the town council for 3 years, we kept capital reserve budgets because a capital reserve budget, it's a responsible mechanism for a business, for a bank, for a municipality, because you know you're going to need a fire truck every 10 years. You know you're going to need another police car. You're going to need a new roof for the school. So those aren't unexpected things. But the state doesn't budget any kind of capital reserve. So in many ways, whatever the budget was decided on in Augusta, and I've looked at it, it's insufficient because much of the capital needs have either been deferred or they're using debt instruments going out to pay for them. So in effect, we're running at this deficit. And over the last 7 years in the state level, we're spending more, taking in less, and every elected official goes up there to Augusta saying, oh, elect me, I'll help come up with a budget. But very few of the people in Augusta either understand math, finance, or economics because they think because they have a budget, that solves the problem. It doesn't, in my mind, doesn't solve the problem. It defers a lot of the problem. You know, talk about Maine as an economic environment. Your banks exist here. Most of your customers probably exist, you know, live in Maine. But we have such a closed economy with very little outside capital coming in. What do you look at relative to Maine's economy and how that impacts banking and Camden National Bank?
Mm-hmm. Well, I look at, you know, let's say what's going on in the state legislature and the governor's office on the budget. You know, one, it's not just a point in time. This has been issues that have, you know, plagued Maine and other states for many, many years. And we could even say at the federal level. The thing I get concerned about is not only running a company in Maine, but being responsible for 480 employees, as well as 60,000 customers, is I think we need to step back and change the discussion from this two-year budget or raise this tax or cut this service to the economic reality of Maine and where do we need to invest. I think that's where the discussion has to be. And sometimes if you're doing it from an investment thought, you may have to spend and hope that you get a return on that investment. So that takes into things. When you look at Maine's population, 1.3 million people, but what I get more worried about is we have an out-migration of young people. There are more deaths in the state of Maine than births for the past several years. And a lot of times as I get involved with some economic development people around the state and companies are looking to move to Maine, and I think we have a certain cachet that people would like to come to Maine, they always ask, can you get the employees to do the work? And when they look at those demographic factors, education factors, right, that, you know, how many college graduates do we have? Those are areas where we have to say, maybe we need to invest more there, but where do we invest or not spend elsewhere? And I think a lot of people have that frustration because we don't know where we're going. In a business, you set up a three-year or five-year strategic plan. Gut-wrenching process. You ask a lot of tough questions, and you follow through on that. The dialogue hasn't been there yet. How I look at it for, you know, our customers and my organization is Camden National can only be as successful as our customers can be. A strong economy, whether it's the state or local communities. As I tell people, if our customers succeed, we'll succeed.
Right.
And we always have to remember that in banking, that it's part of being, you know, that community bank, that we're really, our customers are our neighbors.
I agree. We have Greg DeFoor here. He is president and CEO of Camden National Bank. And if you have not heard, Camden National Bank is in the process of a merger, more of an acquisition, I think, of Bank of Maine, which Greg anticipates should be completed sometime in October, October 16th. You said something about a minute ago about economic development and economic development leaders. We don't allow that kind of talk here on the show. I wrote a column last week suggesting that I had the five answers on how to fix Maine. I think there's parts of Maine that are broken. I also think it's the greatest state in the country. I also think it's been a wonderful place for me to build a business and for my family and my kids to grow up. But it has some real structural issues and some real economic issues. In the whole economic development thing, I put it in the category of mythology and the way it happens here in Maine. I believe the biggest economic development boom to Maine is the hiring of all these economic development directors. And the biggest financial impact for the state goes directly to the catering departments of hotels all around Maine, where every week or so there's a Tuesday morning economic development or a green thing or a, you know, startup thing, and there's croissants and there's blueberry muffins and there's coffee and there's 100 people show up talking about economic development, and somebody hands out little Post-its, and then you break out into teams, and then you put a Post-it in the wall and you say, I hear my cousin works in biotech. I hear that's big. Yeah, let's do that. But money, and you're the expert here. I'm the guy who flunked out of math in third grade, Miss Petrowski's class in Hillside Elementary School in Needham, Mass. And it took me like 5 years to get through high school. And if it wasn't for wood shop and square dancing, never would have had enough credits to graduate. But my view is money, capital, much like water or electricity, seeks its own level, seeks its own course. And so for economic growth to happen here in Maine, having these meetings, you know, companies know where they want to invest. Business is sophisticated. The billion-dollar companies know where they want to put jobs or buildings or infrastructure. Having, you know, Freddie from, you know, Falmouth, Maine call up and say, hey, do you know that on Route 1 we've got fiber optics and natural gas and we're close to the airport? And they're like, yeah, we've got Google Earth. We can figure out where you are. Thanks for calling, Freddie. But when people talk about economic development in Maine, my big beef is I don't think hardly anyone understands what it means. I can't find a single person. I argued with Charlie Colgan, who was the key. It was like he was the only economist in Maine for a while. He retired in the last year or so. But I got into an argument with him, and he's like, well, I don't. My point is, if a bakery opens up across the street from me, or a coffee place, and there's a Dunkin' Donuts up there, and there's a Starbucks down there, people here in Maine celebrate that as some sort of economic development boom. I look at it as, well, it may be a nice place to get a scone, but it's not developing our economy, because you're basically taking money from somebody's pocket here, putting in a pocket there, it's going there. Real economic development for the state has to be capital coming in from outside of the state. Because if we're just regenerating capital within the state, paying for goods and services among the population, that money will degenerate, because some of it seeps out through national companies and global companies, and we keep going down. And so for Maine to grow, my view is we need an economic development policy that brings in from outside the borders. And if you drive around Boston, which you've spent a lot of time in the banking business, and you go to 128, I think you just go to Burlington or, you know, Waltham or Woburn. You look at some of those billion-dollar companies, and they used to be IT, and now there's a lot of med tech, biotech. And you basically knock on the door and go, hey, for your next $400 million complex or your R&D or research group, take 300 of your people that are tired of Route 128 traffic, move them up to Saco. We'll have healthcare, we'll have education, we'll have jobs. We need to have a focused effort to bring economic growth and capital infusion from outside states. And Massachusetts is like just down the path. We don't have to go to China. Paula Page likes flying to China. I think he just likes Chinese food or something. No, go down to Woburn. Go down to Boston and talk to one of these companies and say, hey, our cost of building, our cost of employment, our the quality of life, which you mentioned was one of the drivers for you moving here with your wife or moving back. It was the driver for me. I was living in Atlanta. And we have quality of life. And we're only 90 miles from a trillion-dollar economy down in Boston. And why hasn't anyone figured out, let's stop having breakfasts and let's get a little minivan, go down to the tech quarter and say, let's be an annex for some of the incredible growth happening outside of Boston.
We need an economic strategy.
Yeah.
And part of it is not only, though, attracting outside capital coming in, but protecting the capital that we have in the state now. I look at it. We have a $1.8 billion loan portfolio. Now, you may say, that's great. That's what banks do. But I like to look at it as we have a $1.8 billion investment portfolio. When you look at all the banks combined in Maine, whether we're helping to finance somebody's first home, their second home, or a small business expansion or a big business expansion, we are investing money in the state. We have to protect that because that's the capital we have already.
Right.
And as you said, money's like water. We'll seek its level. When Maine has a reputation and the story's told about some of the great things that's going on, how we're working with our existing businesses that are here, people will get attracted to Maine. And the one thing that I like in my job is I travel throughout the state, visit a lot of businesses, attend a lot of chamber of commerce meetings, and it is amazing the great things that are going on in the state of Maine. And we've got to start telling that story. So if you're in Woburn and you're tired of Route 128, you say, I want to go to Maine because so-and-so's up there and they're having a great time and great resources, great education systems. One quick aside, a lot of us come to Maine for quality of life. And I was talking to one person who was actually leaving the state of Maine and trying to say, well, gee, you go and, here's Maine's quality of life. And he looked at me and said, Greg, you got to remember, Maine hasn't got the quality of life market cornered. And we have to give more reasons than, the quality of life in the state of Maine to, especially for our young people, that will be the economic drivers to keep them here and retain them here.
I agree. We've got Greg Dufour here. He is president and CEO of Camden National Bank, soon to be combined entity with Bank of Maine. You're listening to Tides Morning Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLB. In our last few minutes, why don't we talk about local banking? Many of our listeners, most of our listeners, probably almost all of our listeners, have some banking relationship going from either a savings account, a checking account. Pretty much as an adult, you have to have a checking account to kind of function. Many people have mortgages. Talk a little bit about what your thinking is or forecast relative to interest rates for homeowners or people thinking about buying their first home or refinancing, and interest rates for also deposits. Over the last 7 years, it used to be if you put money in the bank that, you would get a pretty decent return. Talk about how that's, a little bit of kind of, I guess, how the whole banking system works, if you can do that in the next few minutes. But in terms of how the bank has to borrow money, and then how you can only pay interest based on market conditions, and then how interest is set. People hear about, well, mortgage rates have gone up. Mortgage rates have gone from 3.75 to 4 or 4.25. And then talk about what you see happening both the rest of this year and the next few years relative to banking interest rates, both on money that's in deposit and money that people may want to seek out to borrow for either a home or a major purchase.
Sure. I'm not sure if I can condense my 2 years of MBA school into a few minutes, but how I would encourage people when you're talking about interest rates, it is that basic economic function of supply and demand. And if in a economy that is expanding, that is growing, that is really strong and healthy, there's a demand for money and the supply is kind of fixed, so interest rates go up. What we've seen over the past few years, two things, the economy and the economic recovery coming out of the recession in 2009 and 10 has been very weak, combined with the fact that the Federal Reserve has put more money supply in to actually keep rates down. And that's why just today the job report came out. It was strong. They said now this gives the Federal Reserve an opportunity to raise rates because they're looking for signs for a strengthening economy that can stand on its own without their artificial intervention that they've done. We can argue whether that's right or wrong, but with the severity of the recession that we had, it needed to be done, and it's where we are today. So, you know, that's one aspect of interest rates. If I kind of knew where they were going to go, I would probably wouldn't be a bank president. I'd be a better forecaster. But
in general, they're going up. In general, it feels like with the economic conditions, both interest rates and the borrowing money is
the experts
up.
Will say that over the long term, and that could be over, you know, call it greater than 6 months, there's more pressure for rates to rise than to fall, with a caveat that the economy keeps growing and strengthening. That's why these job reports are so important. If job reports or if unemployment was growing, the Federal Reserve, talking to them and hearing their economists talk, if the economy wasn't strengthening, they'd worry about rates rising and it would crush any type of recovery that we'd have. So the big thing is trying to get the economy stand on its own feet and to grow. Now, we can go around and look at the Maine market, you know, especially in southern Maine, we're hearing great reports of a strong housing market, you know, measured by time that a home is on the market, percentage of, you know, list price to offer price. A lot of signs of things coming up. So that's just one factor of interest rates. But the one thing that I would want to do that is in control of individuals is, back to your point, it's kind of the math, is taking care of your own financial situation. A lot of it is risk-based. So if you have a great credit score, you can get a better interest rate than if you had a lesser credit score. Financial literacy is something that all bankers worry about, something that, you know, we spend a lot of time on trying to educate people right from grade schools up to adults.
Right.
And it's surprising that you have to be sensitive to your credit rating, and that is something in everyone's control.
Final question, Greg DeFore, President and CEO of Canada National Bank. Talk about how technology, in your experience in banking, and you've been in banking for quite a few years and now leading Camden National Bank, soon to be along with Bank of Maine, which will be integrated. Technology has impacted every area of business, every area of life. A friend of mine years ago was with Bank of Boston, and that got gobbled up through, was it Fleet, and then Bank of America, and everything is, sooner or later, we're all going to be part of one big company in every industry. But he mentioned about banking. His view was banking is less about the retail experience as much as we all like to purport it is, and it's more about technology, and the banks with the biggest computers are going to win because you're transferring millions and sometimes billions of dollars. How has technology impacted banking, retail banking, which most of your customers are here, and what do you see in the future? Will most banking be done online? You can now deposit checks electronically. It used to be you had to go into the bank. Now there's mechanisms for that.
Sure.
Will we get to the point where banking is about what's on our iPhones electronically, or do you think the retail experience of going into a brick-and-mortar building and saying hi to Sally or Fred at the teller window will always be there?
Sure. The pace of technology change has been dramatic. I tell the story, I remember being at the University of Maine, Orono, 1980, Friday night, sitting around, one of the buddies said, hey, I got to go to Bangor to go to an ATM to get some cash. First time I ever heard of a ATM machine. Once we figured out this guy could get cash on a Friday night, he was really popular. You go from that to now, just this past weekend, I had a check. I take out my iPhone, I can take a picture of it, and it gets deposited into my account. And some of that has just been, you know, over the past 5 years, that has been dramatic. I believe that we will reflect the consumer. So as our consumers buy things on Amazon, they shop online all the time, but also their expectations. If somebody orders something from Amazon, or if I do, I expect that email confirmation in my email box in probably a second. make me feel comfortable. We can't do that in a branch perspective. Our consumers, even us as consumers, we have a quicker expectation. My view is that we have to keep pace with the consumer demand for technology. So we have the online capabilities, we have the smartphone capabilities, even, you know, we'll be introducing Apple Pay later in the year, all of that stuff, just to keep track of our consumers. The big key, though, when you look at our bricks and mortar branches, what I believe they will evolve into is areas where it will be more consultative. You want counsel on financial advice. Well, how do I save for the future? How do I save for retirement? And also, I have a problem. And that is where our staffs will evolve from transactional to consultative. The great news is that in branches throughout banking, especially I think here in Maine, we have a great base because the people that are working in the branches today, they know intimately the banking process. So they are great problem solvers today. They'll evolve to be more of that as part of their job rather than transactional. And I believe that's going to be a great opportunity for people and organizations.
Great. And so when the I agree with you that it's going to evolve, and I do think the human enterprise, you know, what we do here at TimeSmart is all about human interaction mm-hmm. and live marketing. And I think there's, you know, technology and different applications, literally and figuratively, quickly evolve, but they also many times become obsolete. For anyone who invested in like 8-track music manufacturing, you'd be a little disappointed now. But yeah, having a presence in a community and having some empathetic connection to your customers, I think is key.
Yes.
And I think
absolutely.
That's from looking at the success you've had at Camden, and I think Bank of Maine has done some really good work. I think that together you guys are going to be really successful.
That's right.
And when it's combined, how many locations will you have here in Maine?
We'll have 64 locations throughout the state. The change in the Camden franchise will be much stronger and a bigger presence here in the Portland and Southern Maine area, and also building within the Gardner-Augusta area from really the core where Bank of Maine started from years and years ago.
Final question. This one's a little bit whimsical, okay? U.S. Treasury recently announced that the $10 bill is up for redesign, and they've designated that they're interested in putting a woman on the $10 bill. Many of the advocates for changing currency wanted the $20 bill, but the Treasury said, no, this is the rotation. I think it's a great idea. I don't know why we haven't. Any personal preferences of who you want to see on the $10
bill,
handle a lot of them?
Yes, I'm a big fan of Margaret Chase Smith, and I think that would be just remarkable to have her on the $10 bill.
Spoken like a Mainer.
Absolutely. I'm proud of it.
Proud of it. Well, thank you so much, Greg, for being here.
My pleasure.
And wish you and the Camden National Bank and with your merger and acquisition of the Bank of Maine all the best of luck. You're a key part of our economy here in Maine, doing a lot of good work. So wish you all the best of success.
Great. Thank you very much.
That was Greg Dufour, who is President and CEO of Camden National Bank. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. We'll be back next Saturday. Thank you.